Thanks for listening to the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Greetings and welcome inside the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon.
Yo.
Hour two as we roll through tonight. Got John Paul Morosi coming up to talk pennant races with us in about 20 minutes. Got NFL week two, I told you so as well, right after this, because I realize a new show that I think would be a really big hit. All right, now follow me on this.
Okay, let's go.
You ever go to like Islands or one of those restaurants where on the TV screens, like during the day, instead of showing sporting events, they just show like eye-pleasing videos? Like at Islands, which is this restaurant here in Los Angeles,
yeah.
There's no games on, they show video of people surfing. Right, just video people surfing and doing it. It's so like you stand watching
an endless loop of people surfing.
Exactly, right? That's all it is, right? It's an endless loop of different people surfing, and it's fun, and you find yourself watching, going, oh, this is nice and soothing, and I would like this. Because he did it again tonight, and it's starting to make its way across social media. Dodgers and Rockies are tied at four apiece. Rockies batting in the bottom of the seventh inning. Big game for the Dodgers. You know, want to keep pace with the San Francisco Giants. Trey Turner, who is having an MVP-type season, let's be honest, had another one of his slides scoring a run tonight where he just gets down late, slides his hand across home plate, and slides all the way through the box, all the way to the dirt, and then just kind of stands up naturally and walks to the dugout. It's hypnotic. It's watching him slide.
Oh, no,
hypnotic.
It's one of the greatest moves of all time.
It is.
It's not even real.
I can't get over it. I can't get over how much joy I get of just seeing that. So what I think would be a really big thing, right? This would be real, is I want a nightly sports show, a half-hour nightly sports show that consists solely of Trey Turner sliding into home plate like that. All the times he slid into home plate like that as a Dodger, as a National, whatever, all the different angles. I just want to see it. And then have it set to Israel Kamikioli's Somewhere Over the Rainbow, What a Wonderful World.
Oh, nice. Right?
Like, put that on a loop. And just imagine, just watching Trey Turner slide across home plate as you hear this song. And it goes through, like, oh, my, I mean, tell me you need anything else in the world. I would sit there for a half hour and just watch it. What are you doing? I'm watching. What are you watching? Trey Turner sliding. Is it live? No. It's just a compilation. Really? Yes. And that song, yes, isn't it a great song? Yeah. Can I sit and watch with you? Yeah, sure. And then pretty soon we're both watching this.
Well, it's hypnotic. And if you add other great slides, I mean, not ones that are broken up and people start getting into fights. I'm talking those style slides, right? Hook slides for big innings or this. I mean, it's just so smooth. It's almost like a moonwalk.
Mm. It really is.
Right? Or you're on the ice trying to slide and,
oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
save. Or
yeah.
Maybe it's a slide tackle in soccer. Yeah. I mean, there's so many different ways to interpret it, but it's just so smooth. I'm waiting for Smooth Criminal to start playing in the background. Dun, 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 oh, and there he is back on his feet.
Dun, 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 dun. It would have to be the Alien Ant Farm Smooth Criminal now. We'd have to
or the one from Glee,
yeah.
Which my kids keep forcing on me.
Oh, really? Oh, that must be tough.
Oh, yeah.
That must be tough.
Now, we have fun with the miles and miles of tape from Glee, especially when you can add more Jonathan Groff stuff back over the top.
Okay. All right. Hey, you say, hey, listen, how about when you play that, how about I play Miles and Miles of Miles Away by Winger? And then you play that for the girls. They would love that.
Ooh.
Song. But I really, it's hypnotic what he does. How he slides just so late and so effortlessly and right by the catcher who can't even make a turn because he runs all the way to home plate. Like, that's the thing is that, you know, most people slide to, you know, they have to get to home plate faster by sliding. He's so fast and he can basically run all the way to home plate and give you that. He slides sometimes like a foot from the plate. He starts to slide. He just like goes right past it all the way to the dirt. To the edge of the dirt and the grass. I don't know what it is. It's just so pleasing to watch. It's so aesthetically, I can't get over it. I've seen this slide now from tonight.
It brings joy.
300 times I've seen it. 300 times I've seen this slide. It's awesome.
No, and you're going to leave it for the rest of the night. Like, you're at having a nice, I don't know, hamburger and some fries that are endless, right? They'll keep bringing them to you. And you just sit there, and it's hypnotic. Some of it is really good surfing. Sometimes it's a, oh, look out. It's almost like TV blooper and practical jokes. Where it's like, oh, that guy's going to wipe out on that giant wave. I mean, I don't know that. I was on air once when a guy got attacked by a shark during a competition. So that was kind of a big deal on a Sunday morning. But yeah,
well, probably a bigger deal for him than it was for you. Probably a bigger deal for
him. But being able to call it live on air, like, all right, he just disappeared into the water. It looks like we got something happening here. Wow. Either he wiped out or, oh, my God! You know, I got to call it like Jim Ross. It was
Jim Ross. Oh, my God, it's a shark! Da, 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 da.
Exactly. Is Champ okay? There? Yeah, no, he was fine. Okay, is Champ right there? Who's Champ? That'll be decided Sunday night!
The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon live from the Fox Sports Radio studios. When a train, it's a vehicle to railway crossing, the results are often deadly, so be cautious at crossings. And if the signals are going, don't be tempted to try and sneak across the tracks, even if you don't see a train stop, because trains can't. Brought to you by NHTSA. I mean, it's an amazing video. Just keep watching it. You'll say, all of a sudden, I feel so serene and I feel so happy and sedate, and I can just keep watching this over and over and over again. It's nothing like it in baseball. But let's get to some NFL Week 2 I Told You So's. Because, you know, I really hate to say I told you so.
Oh, I know. It's the worst thing for you ever.
And we're going to go big game hunting for these Week 2 I Told You So's. And first one kind of dovetails into news today. Ben Roethlisberger is now fighting a pec injury. This coming off the Steelers' loss to the Raiders, in which the Steelers' defense got gashed by Derek Carr. A far cry from their Week 1 effort against the Buffalo Bills. But
well, a lot of injuries,
but this is where I told you so. I'm not believing in the Steelers. Their offense has so many issues. They can't run the ball like they want to. You know, they're expecting to plug in Najee Harris. He's going to be just like James Conner, like Le'Veon Bell. And Najee Harris is not that guy, right? He's not that guy. And they can't throw dynamically. And now Roethlisberger is hurt. They can't rely on the defense, who had this big reality check against the Raiders. Look, the Raiders may be really good. I mean, I understand that for a second. The Raiders might be really, really good this year. But their offensive line struggles. Ben Roethlisberger got hit a lot, 10 times in the game on Sunday. Mm-hmm. This is all part of my not believing in Pittsburgh, because I told you, by the time the weather gets cold enough and we get to the late part of the season, Roethlisberger is not going to be able to throw the football. And it's going to be a rough ending for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But here we are already, Week 2, and Roethlisberger's injured, and the team is having trouble on the line, running the football. Yeah, this is why I said I'm not buying the Steelers for this season, because of all of these things. Now, it sucks they're all happening at once, but they're still all happening.
Yeah, I think when we look at this squad, and it was a rough effort, right? You had the late scratches of both Devin Bush and Joe Hayden. So obviously those two down, and now we're waiting to find out exactly how badly injured TJ Watt is. So three of your big pieces, right? When we're talking about guys at each level, now we've got a problem. Offensively, you changed out your offensive line thinking, all right, we'll roll it up, and then bringing in Harris, as you said, would make it work. And thus far, it's been a failed experiment. You got the victory against Buffalo, tough-fought game, grinded out. But Week 2, when we're looking at Ben Roethlisberger, and then the last play of the game, when all of a sudden Deontay Johnson's on the ground, you're going, my God, can it get any worse? Fortunately, it doesn't look like that's going to be severe. But, yeah, they need to rework and retool this offense. I heard some folks immediately going, is it going to be Mason Rudolph time or Dwayne Haskins? What are we seeing?
What did I tell you? What did I say? Week 11 for Dwayne Haskins, right? Did I say week 11? That's the over-under?
Might be sped up now. Yeah.
How much money can Mike potentially... I'm like that guy that had the bet on the 15-team parlay, but he had the Lions at the end last night. How close am I to making that
bad
long
job
shot
by
come
him.
In? But yeah, Steelers, that's why...
He ought to identify himself at this point, though, buddy. Because, I mean, he got a lot of run for that bet, and really... In the end, it's a loser. So it's a lot of anonymous publicity, which really doesn't
buddy,
do you a whole
I'm
lot of good.
You, It's Calvin Johnson trying to get his money back from the Lions. He was trying to figure out a way to get that $1.5 million he had to give back. That's why he's not saying anything. It's Calvin Johnson.
I like that. No, that was a good theory. I do dig that.
So yeah, I told you so about the Steelers. And what did I tell you about Ezekiel Elliott? Right after week one, I said, look, this is more diminishing returns from Ezekiel Elliott. His contract is going to be the bane of the Cowboys' existence for the next couple of years because the way I'm watching him run the football, like Sam Darnold, he is just a guy. If the hole is there, he'll run through it. But he's not somebody that's making people miss. He's not picking up extra yards. Tony Pollard is playing better than Ezekiel Elliott. Pollard came in last year and played well when Elliott couldn't do it. He is on a diminishing returns path, and it's not going to get any better. Suddenly, Ezekiel, it's not something he got paid, and now Zeke is, yeah, whatever. That's kind of Ezekiel Elliott. And the team is no longer running driven. They did run. They did have a lot of yards rushing against the Chargers, which is great. But this is a Dak Prescott-driven team. And now his contract, that's a luxury. Okay, it's a luxury as long as he performs. And when he's not performing, and you see that, boy, we can get the same out of a guy like Tony Pollard, who we're not paying nearly as much money to, that contract hangs around your neck like it's kryptonite. And Superman can't get it off, and they throw him in the pool at the end of Superman. Sorry, spoiler alert. Superman is okay. He gets out at the end. But that's kind of what this contract is. Zeke is just a guy. You see it with running backs. It happens. Whether they wind up getting paid and they just decide to stop, they just decide to stop challenging themselves, whatever it is, I got paid and that's it. And Ezekiel Elliott has been that kind of guy. And now you see him, he doesn't look special. He doesn't look like this used to be one of the top three running backs in the NFL 3 years ago. He looks like he's just a guy. And all that money you are paying him, a guy who plays a position that is eminently replaceable in the National Football League. I told you about Ezekiel Elliott, and it's even more so on Sunday, right? Tony Pollard had three less carries than Elliott, and he had 38 more yards. And this is a game in which the Cowboys were blowing the Chargers line off the ball. So everything was there, and still Tony Pollard had a bigger game than Ezekiel Elliott did. What does that tell you? I'm telling you, this contract, Ezekiel Elliott, the tide is going to turn against him, and if the Cowboys start failing, it's going to be, they're not going to blame Dak because Dak's the quarterback. It's going to be, oh, Zeke is not who he was, Zeke is not getting it done, and no one's going to be wrong. They're going to be right about that.
Yeah, I mean, folks, go back and listen to what we talked about all last year, and certainly the I Want Your Flex podcast last year, and to start this one, of Tony Pollard having a big run for you. This week, he's going to be one of the waiver wire darlings after that big performance, and look at what he's done the first 2 weeks. Still available in about half a league. So there's your little nugget for the day. But he outperformed Zeke last year. He was a better runner. Here's the thing that Zeke does that Pollard can't, is he's a much better pass protector. So I don't know how you quantify that, but that's where Zeke is still differentiates himself. Look, that play that Blake Jarwin got killed for, Zeke raised his hand. He goes, I got to be able to run through that guy. Remember in week one, the missed block and everybody started, oh, no, that's all on Blake Jarwin. No. Zeke of 3 years ago is running through that guy and carrying him through the goalpost. And so there's certainly something lost there. And we look at the offensive line trying to get their bearings, and they had a great job this week run blocking, as you said, just about 200 yards. I know Justin Frostberg right now is banging a table at his home, our executive producer, thinking about that game once again. But Pollard explosive to the outside, good in the pass game. So, yeah, there's going to be opportunities and a workload split. Will he overtake him outright? No, because, again, to keep Dak Prescott upright, they're going to need Ezekiel Elliott to accept that role and just smile and say, well, we're cutting the checks and that's all there is to it. And appreciate that when you get your dollar cost averaging, and here we go, Smith, dollar cost averaging in, Pollard costs you nothing. So in the end, you're getting great production on balance from these two guys rolling forward.
I mean, it's a position that you never invest money in because of the possibility of injury or a lack of production, because it happens that way.
So it goes so quick.
It does. It's and I feel bad because, hey, it used to be you're a running back, get to the NFL, get paid. The team is built around you. But then teams, you know, right around the early 2000s realized, oh, wait a minute, why don't we build around the quarterback because there's a less chance of him getting hurt, and let's have the guy that has the ball in his hand in every play be somebody we build the team around. So the era of the NFL and throwing the football 45 times a game was born. And that's what happened to the running back position. I feel bad that it's gotten kind of phased out, but, you know, everything in the NFL goes in cycles, and right now you're seeing the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, you know, shut down cornerbacks, edge rushers are getting paid, defensive ends are getting paid, and eventually you're going to say, okay, we'll go back and the tight ends will get paid. But right now, for the last years, a running back has been a position that everybody understands you just kind of have to get by with. If you're lucky enough to have a star running back, great. What you should be doing is franchising him all the way through. He may be upset, but it's like, dude, you're going to get $15 million this year. If you're good, you'll get $15 million next year. And if you're really good, we'll give you you'll get $18 million a year after that. Then you can go somewhere and sign a big contract, right? But this is how you have to go and treat the running back position. The Cowboys decided, oh no, we have to pay Zeke because we draft him and look how good he is. And now I'm telling you, it's going to be an anchor dragging them down until they can get out of his contract after 2022. It's going to be this year and next year because the dead cap hit is $30 million each of the next 2 years for Elliott. So you know he's not going anywhere. And you're going to have to watch him not be the best running back on the team. That's going to be the tough part for the Cowboys. He's going to get all the blame. Ooh, I'd stay off of social media if I was Zeke. I really would.
Well, but that's why we did all went through it last week, right? Going through where the first round picks are. When you got the slotting system and you're not putting up the big $40 million novelty check like you won the lottery, coming out of after Sam Bradford was the last guy to get it, you start looking at, well, it's slotting, and if I can get a quarterback here or a left tackle, there's longevity. If they're right, it's a decade versus 3 to 5 years of a running back. It's why the running backs, outside of those transcendent guys, your guy Saquon Barkley, most of the guys are drafted in the 20s, 30s, or into the second round.
Twitter at How About a Fresca? Mike at Swollen Dome, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon. Dealing with a dead battery? Head to AutoZone, America's number one battery destination. They offer free battery services like free battery testing and free battery charging. Their free battery testing can help you know if you need a new battery or not. And if you do happen to need a replacement battery, well, they can help with that too. They got reliable replacement batteries starting at just $79.99, and they're the only place you can find proven tough Duralast batteries. So next time you're having battery trouble, head to AutoZone, your battery solution and America's number one battery destination. Well, what to expect from these red hot MLB pennant races the last 2 weeks of the season? The perfect person stopping by with us to discuss this next, right here, Fox.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon.
Hey.
What a night we've seen so far in Major League Baseball. Dodgers and the Rockies tied at 4 apiece. Everybody in the AL East keeps winning. This is going to be some kind of last couple weeks for the pennant race. Joining us now on the hotline, no one better. MLB Network, Fox Sports Radio, insider extraordinaire. You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. That's at John Morosi. John Paul Morosi with us. What's happening, buddy? How are you?
I am outstanding. I happened to check the score of the Monday night football game last night at halftime, and I said, my gosh, the Lions are actually winning at Lambeau. This is interesting. And then in the morning, I checked what happened the rest of the evening, and I was not surprised.
Yeah, you know, that's a game where you check, and then when it's going well, you know not to check again because that's probably as good as it's going to get.
Exactly right. That's why I actually did not watch a single down. I just checked the score at halftime, and then when the game was over in the morning, I checked it again. I said, the very predictable thing happened. So that was predictable. That was predictable. Where we are at right now in baseball, where one of the big stories is Kevin Kiermaier finding a loose scouting card in the dirt around home plate and Connor McGregor on the mound. Those are two stories I did not expect would be leading the baseball conversation this evening.
Well, let's start with the Conor McGregor thing, because we watched his first pitch before the Cubs game tonight, and he throws the ball off the brick 30 feet to the left of the catcher. I see these first pitches, JP, now, and I know that guys are just doing it for the attention, because they know if I just throw a regular first pitch, no one's going to care. But if I throw one so craptastic, I'm going to be all over social media. And here's Conor McGregor dying for publicity, so I'm going to throw the first pitch all the way as far as I can to the wall. I kind of see through this act now, I think.
Well, that's a great question. And I did not actually have a chance to join any Zoom press conference with Conor to see how he felt about his pitch selection there, to see how his mechanics were doing in advance, what the pitching coach said, what the game plan was. I do think, let's be honest, given his career, what I know of it, which is not very much, there may have been some showmanship there. I think based on track record, one could indicate that perhaps that would be fitting in a pattern of what he has done to perhaps get himself in the sports world and hype up whatever's going on in his career. But I think in general, we have seen other people, I think, rather authentically misfire to that extent, but that was an all-timer, my friends. I have not seen anything of that nature in a long time, so I would have to say that one ranks up there with one of the worst first pitches I've ever seen.
Well, that was just absolutely spectacular, but the better on-field pageantry and, well, potential fisticuffs between squads is, as you mentioned, the Kiermaier and Kirk interaction at home plate. Card goes flying from the wristband, and it's like, hey, look what I got here. I've got information. And then it becomes a, you stole our plays. I mean, I saw folks, even JP, bringing out an old Brady Bunch episode where there's a fake playbook when Marcia starts dating someone from the rival squad. What do you make of all this, and how does it play out between teams?
Well, this is really unique, and there are a couple different ways to look at this. First of all, I don't think Kiermaier violated any rule. There is nothing that would merit disciplinary action. One could argue that this is maybe a bit foul play relative to where the game is and what is good sportsmanship. Then again, if you bring, I was thinking about this tonight. This is the equivalent of you're going to an open note test and you drop your notes and someone picks up your notes and they are able to more successfully complete the test than you. I mean, they were your notes and they fell. Now, I think an old school baseball person might say, well, that's what you get for having to have a card on the field, right? I mean,
yeah.
They may say that back in the old days, as in like 2010, they would just sort of play the game without having to need these scouting report cards, which, by the way, everyone has now. Outfielders have them. Infielders have them. Pitchers have them. Catchers have them. Everybody does. And I think that, by and large, these scouting cards help you make good decisions on the field about where to go. But this is one indication of, by the way, a team that you might be facing in the playoffs now has the equivalent of your playbook, and that's suboptimal if you're the Jays. But then again, what are you going to do? You're not going to hit Kiermaier with a pitch and say, "Hey, don't pick up our play card." I mean, it's just it's a little silly, and I think it just sort of illuminates how when you start bringing the game of baseball down this very unique, data-driven, somewhat heavy-handed analytical approach, that there are some things that pop out of the field like a play card that never existed before. And honestly, guys, this also begs the question, and again, you would know better than me because you actually follow the sport, how often do quarterback wristbands or play cards in football fall into the wrong hands on the field? Like, I'm asking the honest question, does that ever happen in the NFL? These guys, the quarterbacks now have these massive wristbands with all kinds of digits on them and all kinds of other stuff. I mean, what do we see there? Anything?
No, the last time was what? It was the Super Bowl, right? Kyle Shanahan, when he was the OC for the Falcons,
yes,
losing his backpack that had the playbook in it. That was the last time.
That's kind of a big deal.
Happened.
In
yeah.
the Super Bowl, I would say. I mean, that's a pretty significant issue.
Yeah.
So clearly it happens. In football, on some level, it's rather inevitable that I suppose, you have to have a card or something on paper that's out there in the field of play. I guess I can understand that happening a little more easily. In baseball, and where this is especially troubling, is that if you're the Jays, now I don't know what's on that card. It might have just been, when there's a runner on second base and I tap my shin guard, then we're going to go to the second sign after the number of outs, whatever it is, to that way save the mound visit, which I think is what a lot of those wristbands do. But if it has any sort of instruction about how you're going to pitch that team, it's probably not going to change that much in the next 10 days. You know, if you think Kiermaier is susceptible to sliders away, you're probably still going to give him that in 10 days. And it really is a very interesting dynamic where baseball is pretty specific to football in that comparison. All that being said, the Jays should guard their valuables a little more carefully, and I really don't think that there's much that anybody can really do about it. It's really on the integrity of the Rays about how they feel they should use them. This is like a college-level ethics course.
Yeah, but
I don't know what the right answer is.
No,
I want to call
it.
Up my moral reasoning professor from college about what the right thing to do is. I got to.
Do you take a picture?
Sandell,
do you scan it?
Do
you,
well,
do you
really?
Negotiate it like it's a hostage exchange? I mean, what do you do?
Yeah.
It's a great question.
I mean, like, what is the moral decision? I mean, probably the fully, moral upstanding thing. I suppose it was within the realm of Kiermaier's possible gestures to say, hey, Alejandro, here's your card, and just give it back to him. He could have done that, but he didn't. And so I'm not going to blame him for it. I also think that as we talk about players making decisions in big moments, I do have to say that the Mookie Betts moment over the weekend with the Reds was just classic. You know, so young TJ Friedl hits his first home run, and Mookie on the other team asks for the ball back and says, hey, I got you. I'll come back and make sure that I take care of you. And he brings back a signed bat that Mookie himself had signed to make sure that a player on the other team gets his first major league hit ball back. That is awesome. And Mookie's one of the great people in the game, tremendous ambassador. I love that from Mookie, and I wanted to make sure that in the midst of the rather amusing discussion of Kiermaier that I did not run out of time to mention Mookie, because he is the man.
All right, well, I'm glad you said, because I have this in now. I have in exactly what was written on the card that was told. You want me to read it to you?
Yes, please do.
Okay, here it is. Here, because it says, dear pitching staff, just don't suck, because we got six guys with 80 or more RBI and six guys with 20 or more home runs. Give up less than 8 runs a game and we'll win. Don't blow it for us. That's what it says.
Sounds about right.
That's
that sounds about right.
That's
and by the way, I think that's well said. The Jays are a scary team. And how about the AL wildcard picture overall right now? Jays win tonight, Red Sox win, Yankees win. It's going to be a tremendous week and a half to go. And I know that we talk a lot of football this time of year, and it's fun and it's great, but when you've got a three-team legit race for only two spots, and they're all in the same division rivals, this is going to be great. I mean, this is all the drama that you want. And, oh, by the way, the Cardinals have won 10 games in a row. Where'd they come from? And then you got the Padres with all kinds of infighting and whatever drama's going on there. My goodness. Stay hot, baseball. We got all kinds of stuff going on right now. This is good stuff.
Yeah, there's no question. What do you make of the Padres scenario, Machado and Tatis Jr.? Was it just fiery leaders having a moment, or is it the culmination of the weeks of, well, let's just call it languishing, and the wins
yeah.
have been sparse and watching the Giants and Dodgers battling?
I think it's both of those things. I mean, first of all, I think Machado and Tatis will still be friends. I don't think this ends their friendship or creates some sort of long-term rift. I think all of us who have been on teams at any level, even the very poor teams that I played on when I was a kid, you get in disagreements with your teammates. That happens. The unique thing here is that they're two highly paid athletes in the nine figures and two of the wealthiest players in the sport getting into it, and it got on TV. I mean, that's what made it interesting. The issue for the Padres, and here's the one thing that I think is important to sort of discuss here with the way they're built. And I know there's a lot of pressure on Jace Tingler. I get that. But sometime go call up the Padres lineup on any given night and count for yourself how many players were drafted and developed by that organization from the very beginning, from the first contract, and there aren't very many. And that's not always a problem, but when the heat gets on very hot, you look around and say, wait a minute, are these guys that I've trusted and been with since I was 18 or 19, or have we all been sort of thrust together in the last couple of years and with a lot of talent? Talent's great, but every talented team struggles. And when that talented team struggles, you have to figure out, okay, where's our compass? Who are we? And I think the Padres, they don't really quite know what they're about competitively outside of being very talented. And I look at other examples of recent teams, the Royals, when they struggled, when they were down in playoff series, hey, Eric Hosmer and Sal Perez and Moustakas, those guys were teammates low in the minor leagues. The Giants, look at what they're doing right now. It's still some of the same names. Posey, Crawford, Belt, they've been there for multiple championships. The Cardinals, when they've been good in the past. The Dodgers, they've got a very homegrown group, even though they've had some superstars added in there. The Padres, they're talented. They've got a lot of great professionals there, but they don't have a lot of battle-tested time together. And I really think that has shown up here in a big way. Plus, their pitching's just been inconsistent and hurt. And that's been, I think, another key thing that we can't overlook and is important to really emphasize. Paddock, Clevinger, Lamet, Snell, they haven't been what they expected. And when that's all the case, it's really hard to win.
All right, JP, let's finish here. One-sentence answers for two of the biggest questions in baseball. You ready?
I got it. One sentence is actually my specialty. Go ahead.
All right, very good. The winner of the NL West will be?
Dodgers.
The American League wild cards will be?
Red Sox, Blue Jays.
Oh, you can never go to New York again. You can never go to New York again.
Oh, because I didn't pick the Mets to make the playoffs?
No, you didn't pick the Yankees.
I was being a little facetious there, Jason.
Just slightly.
You are so earnest. You're such an earnest Mets fan. You've had such strife. It will be okay, my friend. It's going to be okay. They were not, I'm going to tell you something, they were not that good to begin with this year. And as soon as DeGrom got hurt, they were never the same team. So I would advise all Met fans, don't get too upset at Luis Rojas or anybody else. You had the best pitcher in the game. He got hurt, and they haven't been the same team since then. And the Braves were more talented all along. I mean, that's right? I mean, like, can we at least just get on board with that idea?
I'm with you, JP.
Sure.
I'm with you. Look,
Harper's also better than anybody else on that team.
Yeah.
Is he an MVP?
Right.
Is he the MVP now?
He might be. I think the Phillies, they've gotten close enough that I think he's got a real chance. The NL MVP is a really interesting one. I think the AL certainly is Ohtani with Vlad as a strong second and Semien probably third. Sal Perez, by the way, all-time home run single-season record for a catcher. What a guy. I was telling you earlier he also at one point in time caught, I think, like 140-some-odd games in a single season. He, like Mookie Betts, is also the man.
He's on Twitter at John Morosi. That is at John Morosi, a man who has been called the Eric Hipple of Baseball Insiders. JP, as always, buddy. Appreciate it,
my friend. Hey, man, Eric Hipple had some good years back in the day. he really did. I was a big fan. You know, we had Greg Landry, Tobin Rote back in the day. It's good stuff there for the Lions.
Nice. There you go.
Take it easy, buddy.
Love you guys.
Fun. We'll
all
talk
best.
To you.
Thanks.
He got Tobin Rote reference in. That was nice.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler T.J. Houshmandzadeh and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, T.J. Houshmandzadeh, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Fox Sports Radio, The Jason Smith Show with my best friend. His name is Mike Harmon. Hey, when a train hits vehicle at a railway crossing, the results are often deadly. Be cautious at crossings, and if the signals are going, don't be tempted to try and sneak across the tracks, even if you don't see a train stop, because trains can't. Brought to you by NHTSA. Well, this clearly was the oddest story of the day and one that gained a lot of attention. The Superdome roof caught fire in New Orleans, and maybe you saw a video of this. People were tweeting out, oh, the Saints have elected a new pope. It's like, how does the roof of the Superdome catch on fire? They were able to put it out. One person was injured with minor burns, so all good news. You know, basically, you know, the one person who got hurt, very minor. But I'm watching this going, okay, how does that roof catch on fire?
Yes.
And then the story comes out that the crew was pressure washing it in preparation to paint it next week. So I just have to raise my hand and go, if you're washing the roof, you're using things like water and soap. How does a roof catch fire if you're washing something? I don't understand. And all day, there's not been any explanation. Is it they were power washing it? Well, you realize it sounds ridiculous, right? That you were washing something and it catches fire. I mean, it's like, oh, I caught fire. Where were you? I was in a pool. I was insane, man. All of a sudden, I was on fire, man. Oh, yeah, I was in a pool. Wait. And I keep waiting for a reason. And no, it's just as we figure out the cause, we figure that we were pressure wash. How does that happen? How do you pressure wash something and it winds up catching on fire? I don't understand.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure when we get that from the statement and the Louisiana Stadium and Expedition District. That's who issued this. I don't know if did you have a machine up there and maybe there was some kind of spark as opposed to just the water. Like did something happen where you had that quick ignition? I need more information as to what kind of, because I pressure wash things. You probably pressure washed things before, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of a thrill to watch dirt roll off as it
does.
Oh,
dude. I used to have to do that when I worked in a Pathmark in the produce department. Every Sunday, we called it blitzing night. You had to blitz, and it was you had the pressure washer. And just being able to do stuff like get gum that's been on the ground for like a month, and you just, and the gum just comes flying off, and suddenly the ground is so clean. Oh my God, it's amazing. I love pressure washing. It's so much fun to do.
Yeah, no, so I've done that, but you're at a distance, right? And maybe you're plugged in, maybe you've got, you know, the like a lawnmower, right? You got your gasoline and you're revved up, but you're not touching anything, right? It's just the spray of water. Here I'm wondering, did they have some kind of machine that was up there? Did someone screw up? And there was an accident with the actual equipment that then caught the roof on fire. I have so many questions here, but I saw that this morning and I'm like, what the hell else can happen to the city at this point? Come on.
Yeah.
Like you've had just decade after decade of bad, and we can get into development and where things got built and where maybe they shouldn't have been built. And that's a whole other thing. But right now you just got a convergence of just horrible circumstances one after the next. And even though this one ended up being a minor issue, it still brings to bear all the memories of all this other stuff that's occurred.
I'll tell you the good news is that there's not going to be any delay in any further events, because the next time the Saints are home is not until the beginning of October. So you have a little bit of time. So that's the best news, is that, hey, we're going to be okay. Like, we're not going to postpone. People aren't going to miss stuff. You can still look forward to the Saints coming back home in a couple of weeks and watching Jameis Winston throw picks. Touchdowns. I meant to say touchdown. Ooh. Too soon?
Well,
too
they're soon good, they will. Good news, they'll get those 9 assistant coaches that couldn't work in week 2 back.
Okay, that's true. That's true. Okay.
Well, all those guys that were in COVID protocol that had to stay in their hotel rooms, and it was Sean Payton against the world. But I thought he was a genius. Evidently, Matt Rhule won that one.
Twitter at How About a Fresca? Mike gets swollen dome. The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon. Coming up next, if you thought Conor McGregor's first pitch at the Cubs game was something, wait till you hear him singing the 7th inning stretch tonight. Oh, my goodness. That's next right here. Jason and Mike, Fox Sports Radio.